Thank you to Barb Park, our choir director, the musicians, and some of the members of the Prairie Choir. I'd like to welcome you to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. We are a lay-led congregation. We welcome individuals from a variety of backgrounds, races, and beliefs, and are welcoming congregations to individuals of all sexual orientations. I'm Nancy Schrafnagel, the president. Any guests or visitors will have opportunities later in the service for introductions. This morning's service is led by Delita Shapru and Jennifer Parker, respectful disagreement between nicey-nicey and spilling blood, and we will start with the chalice lighting. Read by Erica Stone.
Before Erica reads, I'd like to light the chalice. I'll start it first, you can see if it works. I light the chalice for the lively, informative, and thought-provoking discussions that take place in this lay-led society. And I also light the chalice for the opportunity we have to learn and pass on to our young people techniques of respectful disagreement. Ponder the following words written by Eileen V. Karpeles, a fellow Unitarian Universalist.
A Place of Meeting by Eileen V. Karpeles. Out of wood and stone, out of dreams and sacrifice, the people build a home. Out of the work of their hands and hearts and minds, the people fashion a symbol and a reality. May this house be truly a place of meeting, meeting one with another in warmth and joy and openness, meeting one with another in courage and love and trust. May all who enter here trust one another so surely that they dare to share the deep fires that burst into anger, as much as the sweet spring waters that swell into laughter, the slow erosion of wounded tears as much as the soaring song. May these walls know silence as 100 hearts search inward, each for its own small spark of hope that might otherwise be snuffed out in the noise. May these reactors hear the voice of the child as surely as that of the orator, and the sound of the lute, the clack of the typewriter, the swish of the broom, and know that all are as holy as the shout of a million stars. May the rain fall lightly on this house, the sunshine warmly, the winds blow softly, and bless it as a place of peace and joy.
We'll now have a few minutes of reflection and meditation on the reading. Now is the time in our service where we share our joys and sorrows with each other. Larry?
Forgive me if this isn't the right part of service to ask this, but is it too late to sign up for snow shoveling for this week?
Well, that would be a joy.
That's a joy.
I'll check my list and let you know later. I know the grass isn't really up yet, but...
Speaking of snow, I have
snowdrops
up 2 feet in my
yard
with
oh,
bogs on the lawn.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
Rachel. Well, as some of you know, they discover I had cancer in my left breast last fall, and I had an operation, a lumpectomy, and they think it was successful, but I'm undergoing radiotherapy 6 weeks. I had my first two last week, so, and I'm doing really well. I feel good.
Karen.
I finally got my, I know my official depart date. I'm leaving July 10th, and I'm going to go to the Dominican Republic and work in small business development. And for the first 3 months, I'll be living in the capital city, Santo Domingo, with a family. And it's the largest city, it's the capital city of 2.5 million. And then for the next 3 months, I'll be living with another family in another area. And then after that, I'll be out of my home. So really looking forward, I did officially accept. And I will be doing a service on going to the Peace Corps and the Dominican Republic specifically. So I hope you all come to that. I want to invite you to come to come to that service and find out about the Dominican Republic and share some of my thoughts about being a Unitarian Universalist and what I think about going overseas and how I'm going to handle the new experience.
Okay, it's final. Good. Robin.
My 40-year-old brother is going to be married for the first time in May in Normandy in France, and so I get to see my brother married and also get a trip to France.
Such a deal. Yes, Kay.
Gee, we're just budding with Joyce today, aren't we? Bees are going north too. Has just given somebody a disability. They're probably admitting, yes, this was not a good idea to put somebody who had a plate of sticks into the service. And they can do all that stuff. I'm also getting some retraining in my job, and I'm enjoying it. So my company's holding out. I'm getting some training. It's good.
Some positive shifts. Other joys or sorrows? Yes. Turn around for us?
Good morning, good parent members. You know, yesterday, my first bike ride, 14 miler.
Oh.
And honestly, it's walk in the park compared to what I'm going to be doing this year, that I can raise the funds. Here's my goal. From the West Coast to the East Coast, for the American Lung Association. They're just beginning to calculate money for mileage. I need a little more calculation yet, but I'll keep track. I'll let y'all folks know how I'm doing as I was reaching my small pocket change, $7,000 goal.
How do we pledge?
Next week I'll bring sponsor forms and no cash. American Lung Association.
We have had a few forms on the membership table in back. I believe the donations are sent to the American Lung Association. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Al.
Two things that directly affect our neighborhood that I live in. One, the whole, in fact, both of them, the whole city. Ash and I yesterday had the opportunity to be at the Edgewood College for the Friends of Lake Windrup Festival. Wonderful group that's formed, and I have to give you a second-hand report that the San Diego Friends have arrived on Lake Windrip. So go down and check out the march at this end. There are some there. I haven't seen them, but I intend to go. The other is I went to a hearing a week before last on the Southwest Bicycle Corridor, which will be built pending a vote of the City Council at their next meeting along the Illinois Central Railroad tracks from the campus out past the Home Depot store and on out, connecting up with the other bicycle trails.
Bob.
I just want to say that I'm not sure that all this talk about early spring is a joy. It may portend a terrible drought. I know the Ohio Valley last year practically had no agricultural productivity at all. They had a very early, very warm spring, and then it was followed by a period of absolutely no rain. I'm real disturbed by the drastic changes that are going on in the weather and the climate, and we have to think about global warming. It may be a terrible sorrow this spring is coming so early.
Well, duly noted. Yes, Mike.
Thank you.
laid out of hand.
Your pain has saved you.
We could tell that joke that he told me last night, but never mind. Afterwards.
After service, okay. Any other joys or sorrows? Okay, we're ready for our children's story, which will be read by Susan Hangstrom. How are you feeling?
With moods. With foods with moods.
Foods with moods, yes.
Children, want to come up front?
Yes. Hey, adults want to see better?
Yes.
If I start reading, I'll throw you out. Front cover there. They did this. They're all natural fruits and all natural smiles. Just carved out. How are you feeling? Happy or sad, feeling blue or feeling bad. Can a gentle, smiling friend try to cheer you up again? When you have to wait because someone is late, are you bored, jumpy, worried, grumpy, excited as the minutes passed? Now your friend is here at last. How are you when friends drop by? With someone new, a little shy? Don't be long, not for long. Feel secure or not so sure? Amused, confused, frustrated, surprised. Try these feelings on for size. How are you feeling? When you're attacked, do you react? How do you feel when someone is mean, timid, bold, or in between? When you're angry, do you pout? Whine, cry, scream, shout? Feeling sorry and ashamed, or embarrassed to be blamed? Jealous? Disappointed too? When you are hurt, who comforts you? So many smiles, can you decide who's feeling safe, who's feeling pride? Wired, tired, need a kiss? Do you know anyone like this? Do you let your feelings show? Who do you love? How do they know? When how you feel is understood, you have a friend and that feels good. How are you feeling? Yes. And it says a note about the art. To create these sculptures, markets throughout the New York metropolitan area were plumbed for expressive produce.
Thank you, Susan. People may go downstairs for religious education and child care. Our first hymn is hymn 360, Here We Are Gathered.
That some of those pictures hit home as I was getting ready to come this morning. Don't ask, Warren. First of all, it's encouraging to see you here. We're glad you showed up. Jennifer and I are doing this service as co-learners, and we are not dealing with specific situations or specific individuals, but with techniques that we believe will be helpful to all of us. We request that you hold comments and questions until the discussion period. In organizing the program, we made the following assumptions. Some of us see the need for improving our interactions. None of us want to stifle prairie discussions with rules or scrutiny. Number of us in here know a lot about respectful, assertive discourse. None of us practice it to the best of our abilities. Speaking of this morning, I can think of no better time than election primaries for a program called Respectful Disagreement between Nicey Nice and Spilling Blood. Most of you have a pretty good idea of what it means when you see this. I don't know if you can read it. It says, McCain, Bush spilled each other's blood all over South Carolina. We know what that means. They dissed each other. This week, Bradley and Gore dissed each other. And the dissing has just begun. In political campaigns, such behavior is typically planned, but in everyday disagreements, aggressive, power-grabbing, down-putting, hurtful behavior is not always premeditated. Some people are so accustomed to such behavior, they don't know they are being hurtful, or they don't know how to behave any other way. Similarly, nicey-nice behavior may be deliberate or without much self-awareness. Nicey-nice implies emotional dishonesty. Nicey Nice is the very pleasant employee who reads all the books on how to behave in a corporate setting, never gets angry, then walks all over colleagues to get in good with the boss. Nicey Nice is the fearful person who says everything is okay, or smiles and says nothing, then blames you when you don't properly respond to whatever it is you don't know is wrong. Nicey Nice can be manipulative, hurtful, and not all Nicey Nice. Most of us probably fall somewhere in between the two extremes, and figuring out one's place in the behavioral scale is a tough call, especially when behavior varies according to past experiences, what's going on in our present lives, how we are feeling, when we last ate, or whether we danced late at the Italian carnival the night before we were scheduled to leave the prairie service. Our behavior also depends on our skills for dealing with people we don't agree with, or sometimes don't even like. It depends on our ability to speak assertively to a person who has offended us. It also depends on our willingness to understand and to forgive. This thoughtful book, everybody who comes to Prairie has to have a book. In this thoughtful book titled Civility, Manners, Morals, and the Etiquette of Democracy, Stephen Carter, a Yale law professor and a conservative Christian, writes, "Civility requires that we listen to others with knowledge of the possibility that they are right and we are wrong." Now, is this what a debate-savvy, sharp-minded, alpha freethinker really wants to hear? What's wrong with confrontational discourse, if everyone enjoys it and has an adequately thick skin? Well, maybe nothing. But I propose that it doesn't work in a group like ours, where members move away, new people join, attendance varies from Sunday to Sunday, and we all bring with us different sensitivities, backgrounds, and modes of discourse. Under this circumstance, it is even more important that we pay attention to our society's bond of union, that we stand tall for our integrity, but not at others' expense. Prairie Society was founded by a discussion group, some of them are here, whose members didn't hesitate to forcefully jump into the intellectual fray. Agreeing on Prairie's bond of union must have been a monumental exercise in group process. Ken Skoke, who is still valiantly group processing Prairie's new mission statement, can attest that things haven't changed a whole lot. But Prairie should be a place where people state their opinions, ideally in a civil manner. Civility, as Stephen Carter says, does not mean we mask our differences or refrain from criticism of others. I have religious differences with Stephen Carter, but I respect his insight on civil disagreement. So does Unitarian Universalist minister Elizabeth Banks, who quoted Carter in her sermon on civility. Banks concluded that sermon with the following story. In the forest stood a monastery with only a few remaining aged monks. They failed to attract novices, and the worried abbot approached his friend the rabbi for advice. The rabbi said, "I do not know what is in your future, my friend, but the Messiah is among you." The abbot shared this with the monks. The monks looked at each other and wondered, knowing full well each other's faults and blessings. Slowly, each one started to treat the others differently, because although there were faults in each person, those faults could so many times be their strengths when seen in a different way. Soon other people were drawn to the grounds of the monastery. There was something about how the monks were together that was irresistible. They found themselves increasingly filled with awe and gratitude for their membership, and always, always they approached each other throughout differences and difficulties with respect. Young men who grew up in the families who frequented the monastery grounds noticed this unique caring, and a few of them joined the priesthood. And so the cycle continued, with the monks always searching the eyes and the actions of each other for certainty that the other was the Messiah. Now, I won't accuse Jennifer Parker of being either a rabbi or an abbot, but she does have professional expertise to provide us with the techniques for looking at ourselves and at each other in a different way. So I'm pleased to turn the program over to Jennifer.
Thanks, Delita. I want to call your attention to something that's on the back of your program first, just to demonstrate that we definitely do still want to know your opinions. Nikki, I hope this was okay. Originally, several months ago, the program committee decided that they wanted to have people rate each program rather than wait until the end of the year or something. And as Delita and I were talking about whether or not people would be interested in other information at a future program, I said, well, why don't I pull this out that we never did use? So we would be very interested in you, anonymously or not, rating the program and talking about if there are other, putting down any information you want to on the back of this and just leaving it behind for Delita and I.
If you fill this out, put it on one end of the bench over there, and if you don't fill it out, put it on the other end.
I don't
have to turn them all over.
Okay. Just want to do a time check. When should I stop, Delita?
10 till.
10 till. Okay.
We'll start the discussion.
Start the discussion, okay.
Or earlier if you want to.
Okay. I'd like for each of us to just spend a minute focusing on our breath. Doing the best you can just to focus on your in-breath and your out-breath. And letting any thoughts drift away. And as you're focusing on your breath, noticing what you're feeling. And then after a couple of more breaths, you can open your eyes, bring your attention back to being here at Prairie. Focusing on my breath to be one of the most useful things I can do sometimes in terms of communicating with another person. Because what that does is it helps me to observe what's going on in me and what my reactions are. And part of what I'm going to be talking today about today is really being able to notice that and to observe ourselves. Delita made mention that I'm not a rabbi. I'm also not the Messiah. But I really love that story, and I really like the idea of each of us treating one another as if we're the Messiah, or, you know, as I would put it, that each of us really deserves love and respect, and that each of us has integrity. Really going back to the UU principles and the bond of union, as Delita read it, we should stand tall in our quest for integrity of life, yet it not at others' expense. When I'm teaching assertiveness in my practice to individuals who need that, the definition that I use for assertive behavior is that we stand up for ourselves by expressing our opinions, our thoughts, our feelings, and our actions, while also respecting the rights of others. And if you're not respecting the rights of others at the same time, it's not assertive. And sometimes we fib to ourselves about that. But that is aggressive behavior rather than assertive behavior if both of those things aren't met. One of the things I know as a human being is a whole lot easier to show respect to other people when they agree with me. We all think that we're right. If we have, you know, even a moderate amount of self-esteem, we all like our opinions, at least. And so it's a whole lot easier to respect others if they agree with us. And it takes a great deal more discipline and wisdom, I think, to respect those that we disagree with. Respecting other people does not mean that we necessarily agree with them, and sometimes I think we mix those two things up. Believing in ourselves, I think, is very important, and it needs to be balanced with the belief that others have the right to their opinions as well. Disagreement and conflict are healthy parts of any relationship, as Delita made mention to. You know, we really want to encourage that as part of the discourse here at Prairie. In my practice as a therapist, I probably see just as many people who have problems with conflict because they never witnessed, or because they witnessed the suppression of a conflict and disagreement and anger. Just as many of those come for help as those who have witnessed it in aggressive kinds of ways. So rest easy. We think it's important to have and express divergent opinions and to do so constructively. There are elements which affect our ability to communicate constructively that I want to talk about. One of these is our beliefs. We may have learned beliefs that contribute to problems in expressing ourselves in relationships. We may even know what these beliefs are and know that it's a little bit irrational or unhealthy, but doggone it, when we feel vulnerable, when something catches us unawares, bam, we fall right back into that old pattern with a vengeance. On one of your handouts that I gave out was one on assertive beliefs and behavior. And that one in particular gives a few of the common beliefs that tend to lead to passive behavior most directly. Those beliefs, however, if we are passive for a period of time, anger and resentment tends to build up. And one of two things then happens. It can lead to the boo-boo, as we therapists call it, which means build up, blow up. So if you keep piling up the resentments and the anger, eventually it's going to come out, and probably in ways that you're not going to be proud of, and probably in ways that people are going to wonder, what was that about? So that's one thing that can happen. The other thing that can happen is just as unfortunate, and that is keeping it inside can lead to depression and poor self-esteem. There are other beliefs that tend to lead directly to aggressive behavior, and I'll give just a few examples. One of these is, it's a catastrophe if I don't get my way. And who of us hasn't felt that at some moment, you know, about something that we feel deeply? My way is the right way. I know the best way for others to do things. And I know what you're going to say. And that one, I think, at least when I think about my own self, that one, I think, leads to more impatience with people and more kind of hurting other people than perhaps some of the others, although they certainly affect us as well. That last one leads us to miss important information when we're jumping ahead and thinking we know what others are going to say, and we're so ready to give our own side of the issue or the question or the discussion. And at the very least, we're missing that opportunity to treat that person as the Messiah. As a therapist, I've learned to respect a great deal two things. And, you know, one of them may seem very simple. Both of these elements, I believe, also affect our communication with others. One of them is the power of listening. Sometimes even I, as a therapist, forget just how powerful that really is. Therapists receive a lot of training to help them in terms of picking up on the nuances of communication, the nuances that go on with people, sometimes we forget just how important just being heard is. And so whether you're a therapist or you're a friend even somebody that you don't know very well, listening to that person is a very powerful thing to do. It opens ourselves to possible learning. It opens ourselves to new adventures. The other thing that I know for sure as a therapist that I've come to respect is that I can't mind read. I'm no better at mind reading than anybody else. After 14 years of practice, after all of my education, after all the continuing education, I cannot know for sure what's going on inside somebody else's mind. And if I leap ahead and make that guess, a good time share of the time I'm going to be wrong. So I think that that makes people endlessly fascinating. I love my work. And it also means that I need to be really respectful and careful about how I relate to that person in terms of checking out things, whether things are correct or not, whether my assumptions are correct. And that leads to another element that's really important. Making assumptions about people affects our communication, and it also can affect our lack of communication. One of the things, I know that we've talked about diversity here at Prairie and in other diversity trainings I've done, you know, we make assumptions about people based on many different things. Some of the ones that stand out the most are because of disability or race or something like that. And we may decide we will have nothing to do with that person based on those assumptions that we make. So that's extremely limiting. People do not operate like computers or other machinery. On a good day, at least, if I click on a certain button, I can predict that something's going to happen, that Y is going to happen. But with people, if X happens, we cannot automatically assume that they're going to feel Y, or that they're going to feel like we would feel about it. And so it's important to remember that. The thoughts that we have in our head are related to our own historical experiences, how we grew up, our culture, certainly, our family's messages about how to do things. We grow up with stereotypes. We grow up putting people into boxes. We can't grow up and avoid that. But what we can do is we can be aware, really work to be aware of our attitudes and beliefs and how they influence us, and hopefully open ourselves to changing any rigid stereotypes we have and increasing our tolerance of other people who are different. Sometimes I think it's a whole lot easier for us to think about, yeah, we want to be tolerant, when it's big, you know, categories of people that we're talking about instead of the person in front of us who's expressing a different opinion. So I want to bring it down to that more personal level. My good friend Lisa Glick, who I had a discussion with yesterday and is here, said that observing ourselves is an important step to learning wisdom, and I heartily agree. Meditation is one of the devices that we can use to help ourselves just be aware of our thoughts. And one of the things that I often remind people when I'm working with them is, just because you have a thought doesn't mean it's true. But we kind of assume that, you know. We assume that if we have the thought, then it must be true a lot of times. And so being willing to examine and be aware of our thoughts, I think, is really important. All of us have buttons. You know, they may relate to things that we learned. You know, my favorite button is I'm a perfectionist, and somewhere along the line I learned that if I wasn't perfect, I wasn't okay. I've worked on that a lot, but darn it, when I feel vulnerable, it gets pushed. And I may respond in a way that I'm not happy with later. Some of the common responses that we may have are blaming other people. Another response is just tuning them out. Sort of, you know, you could call it dissociation or just blocking. I mean, we might not even notice that we're tuning them out. Not believing people. And minimizing what they might be saying or thinking or feeling. And all of those things can be very hurtful to people. Another element which I think is really important in this setting is that, I don't know who said this, but I've heard it often, familiarity breeds contempt. And fortunately, when couples come to work with me, you know, oftentimes one of the things that we discover is that they treat each other much worse than they treat anybody else in their world. And I don't know what that is about, but somehow when we get to know somebody, we feel more relaxed, which is good, and somehow our flaws really come out in terms of dealing with that other person. So I think it's an important thing to be aware of, and perhaps to be aware of here at Prairie as well, because we are a small community and we really value getting to know one another and value that smallness, and it could be that the good news is that we do feel comfortable with one another, and the bad news is that doesn't always, our flaws may be coming out and in ways that we're not comfortable with ultimately. Another element that I want to talk about relates to those flaws. We all have them, and I think it's really important to acknowledge that with humbleness, not just to acknowledge that other people have them, but that we have them, and to really look at the process of forgiveness and what that is, and how much we are willing to let go of things which may happen that we're not happy with. Forgiveness is all about letting go, just choosing not to dwell on something. Largely, it's about that. Having talked about these elements, we can look at what are some good habits for giving and receiving constructive feedback. And you'll notice that I used the word constructive in the handout that I gave you. It's really easy to use the word negative, and it kind of carries some connotations that I don't like, because I don't think that it's a bad thing to give constructive feedback. It isn't pleasant all of the time, but I think if done well, it actually builds relationships rather than tears them down. When we aren't willing to do that with one another, that creates distance, you know, if there is some issue there. So we don't have time to do a lot with this. I'll just briefly go over giving constructive feedback. Some of the things that I think are helpful are, first of all, to begin with a positive or a neutral icebreaker. Going to say. Now, just keeping that in mind, if you're going to set the tone, you don't want to negate it, right? So don't use but. Either use a period at the end of that sentence or use an and, because that bridges those two things, and it creates that bridge rather than negating. Anytime we hear a but, we sort of just forget about. It's like that first thing was just pretty unimportant. State the problem tentatively. I think that's a real important premise in terms of good communication. You need to state the problem as you see it. I just talked about the fact that we all see things differently based on our histories, and it's possible that I'm wrong. You know, I liked what you read before about being willing to assume that someone else might be right rather than yourself. So it certainly leaves room for that possible misperception on your part, but also it just again states your good intentions, and it feels much more friendly if you're saying something like, "It seems to me like," or "It feels," or "I'm wondering if, you know, this is going on." So it's in a tentative sort of form. And then ending with a request. This important three-step process can be really powerful. And I've seen a lot of people, it's like, oh, who are so uncomfortable with conflict that they tend to withdraw from it, if anything, who really find this a very empowering tool. I also think it's very helpful in terms of avoiding conflicts which may be hurtful. How do you receive constructive feedback? Well, that's a pretty difficult thing to do, too. None of us like that. It's like, ooh, cold pricklies. Well, first of all, I think it's important to make your first response no response. In other words, that's listening, really hearing, giving yourself time to think, too. And that indicates to the person a very important thing, and that is that you are willing to listen. And that certainly contributes an important element to good communication. As part of that, also avoid denying or acting defensive. So when you do start to say something, try to avoid that, because it just tends to feed the fire. I like to talk about communication as being like softball. You catch the ball when you're communicating with somebody. before you throw the ball back. So hearing and listening is the catching part. What all too often happens is people play tennis, and it's back and forth and back and forth. Nobody is really listening to anybody, but they're really focused on getting their own opinion out there. Ask for the next step has to do with whether or not you need more specifics. A lot of times people's feedback may be pretty general and we're a little bit in the dark about what's going on, so you would ask for specifics rather than get into denial. If they've been pretty specific and you know it's enough information, you might express empathy. Now, you might say, why in the world would I want to express empathy for somebody who's disagreeing with me? Well, empathy doesn't mean that you agree with them. Empathy just shows that you understood. Empathy is, it sounds like you're feeling angry because I was late. And if you didn't get it right, it gives them a chance to correct you. So that furthers the communication. You know, it's a win-win proposition. If you did get it right, then that feels like they were heard. And it certainly demonstrates investment in the relationship. State an emotional response if that's appropriate. That's not always appropriate. We don't always want to share our feelings with people, say at work. Sometimes that feels really inappropriate. So that's sort of an optional one, these last two. I feel is a better way to start out than you make me feel, particularly if it's a prickly feeling like anger. Because what does you make me feel do? Blames. Puts it out there instead of taking responsibility for your feeling. And then the fifth thing that is also optional, if you know that what you've done is bothering the person and you're willing to change it, then you can express that willingness. But that isn't always appropriate. And if you don't agree about the problem after showing that you've heard, it might be your chance to then state the problem as you see it. I'd like to, I think I timed it perfectly, I'd like to open it up to discussion for both of us, you know, Delita or me.
I'll probably toss it back to people in the congregation. So. Oh. Yeah. Go ahead.
This is practice for everybody, and no one's going to condemn you if it doesn't come out perfectly. Okay.
I've got a question. How do you change negative feedback where somebody says, nah, that won't work, into a constructive situation? I'm kind of asking for, like, how do you change it from negative to constructive? Because I've had that happen.
How do you change another person? Is that the question?
No, not change the person, change the construct. So instead of coming from the negative, where you say something,
oh,
somebody says, that won't work, change it into, like, or, you know, like, I don't think that. How can you change it into a positive?
You can't change someone else's behavior. You can only change your own.
Exactly.
Right, but I'm wondering, there has to be some way I can help the situation, or at least give it to the neutral, because, you know, there's... You know,
I guess I need a more specific, perhaps, to understand. I don't know if you have a specific...
If someone gives you negative feedback, how do you
try
to make a positive
voice
that you can't change?
Right, so they just say, you know, it won't work or something like that, and you're given no specifics, and it's like...
Well, that's just specific. What do you see on the problem?
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Did someone have a response to Kay's? Because Rick said his hand up for a while. So I'd like... Did you want to pick up on this?
I'll just throw in a quick response that whenever I'm trying to make a suggestion for something that might help and someone cuts me off and says, no, that won't work, that's basically an expression of fear on their part. Hostility equals fear. I worked 17 years in an emergency department. That little phrase saved me more defensiveness than anything. Hostility equals fear. How do I help this person not be afraid so that they can stop attacking me? Well, I was just going to, my hand went up.
just to compliment you, Jennifer, on that lovely analogy with the softball, that you have to catch it before you can throw it back. But I guess as a softball player, I throw in an intermediate step too. You have to catch it, then you have to get a grip on it before you throw it back.
Thank you. Not ever having played softball, I think. That's really good. Yeah.
Orange, I just wanted to respond, which kind of ties into what Rick said, that by catching what they say and say, you know, you may be right, but if you would humor me so I can explore my idea a little further, I'd really appreciate it. So that you've acknowledged the fact that they have fear or anxiety about it and said, you know, okay, you may be right, but I'm the one who wants to explore this together with you and see if we can go a little further. That might put a more personal spin on it so that they realize that if they turn out to be right and it isn't a good idea, it's your fault.
Cindy, and then Mira.
Well, another part of this being cut off is a lack of consensus about what the problem is. I mean, often there's a one, you see a reason for somebody to change or something to be done, and the other person doesn't even see that or own it to begin with. And so I think that's often a problem, is that there's no common understanding of where you're at.
Marilyn was
one
next
of the
to
things that I've read recently in the book is blending and redirecting. So first you blend with that person, so again, you know, basically what we've all been saying, so they feel that you're emphasizing with their feelings, and then redirect in some other direction depending on the personality of the person. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can't change someone else's behavior, but your attitude toward that person can make a difference.
Larry and then Nancy.
Also, I want to refer back to something Jennifer said early on, and that is keep in mind that maybe the other person's right. Maybe you can defer to that person's expertise, and maybe it will work.
They might be right. I just wish my button is not listed, being listened to. That's my button. Mm-hmm. And so that, for me, that's like, mm-hmm. And maybe what you said, the first thing I do is take a deep breath and go, okay. Mm-hmm. The button just got pushed, now what do I do? Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Kay's comment reminded me of is when you're in a situation and you see an issue or problem that you personally want addressed, either by yourself, this other person, or group of people, and the other person says, nope, not going to do that. And, you know, how do you get past that sort of thing where other people who you want involved in the decision-making process refuse to be involved in dealing with the issue or doing things in a different way? You know, so it's a sort of you're dealing with status quo, mm-hmm. and how can you move forward with the discussion and perhaps change things?
I think it kind of depends upon, you know, who is the person? Is it a peer, or is it somebody over you? Naturally, you have much less
prayer.
Power. Okay, very good.
Do you have any suggestions on something like that, where there's issues?
When I tutored mathematics, I tutored a lot of people who were just like, I can't understand mathematics, I can't understand mathematics. Mm-hmm. So what you do is you approach it with a different perspective. I found children's stories, for example, that had built up with mathematical problems, and that helped them. Or I set up the problems in terms of riddles, instead of actual just plain problems, and that also helps. Mm-hmm. And other times, if they have problems with algebra, sometimes if you set up the algebra problems in geometry, then they can solve the algebra problems.
Hmm. So different perspectives. And I think, too, that, you know, essentially what that person is kind of giving is some negative feedback, or I don't agree, I don't want to do this. And asking for specifics could be a good thing, like, can you tell me why you don't think it's a good idea to do this? So you're gaining more information.
Well, that's exactly right. When I say to somebody, listen, this is not going to work for me. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, yes, it is. It's good. And I want to excuse me.
That's
you can't
the
draw blood from this side.
Right.
And they continue to do this, you know, they punch me, right? They go, you know, you were right. I have the rules all over myself. So because there are
right.
people that just turn you off, and you know, they'll say, no, it's not going to work for me. And they just going to shut you off. So I think the question would be, what do you think? What is it that you, that's in your mind that thinks
cannot do it, or why. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised the answers mm-hmm. you get. Like, mm-hmm. they can't therapeutize them at all.
Right.
There were three hands up over here at one time. Okay, Mickey, Tara. Okay, you're third.
Well, one thing that I would point out is that if you want to be able to communicate people, I would suggest you learn as much as possible about people's personality styles, because sometimes what you think you're communicating is not what you're communicating. And one simple example is, like in the Myers, if you take Myers-Briggs test, it gives 16 different personality styles. So one of the things is the difference between people who process the world as an extrovert, which means they talk and they process things outwardly, versus a person who's an introvert who processes inwardly. If you push someone who's an introvert to answer, well, they're going to say no. And what they're really saying is not no to what you have just asked them. They're saying, no, don't push me. And there's a very different thing there. So one thing I would say is the words that a person says are not actually always the real answer. So you do need to know, the more you know about how people work and what appeals to them, the more you're able to communicate to them.
Yeah, I agree. What you're saying is words mean different things to different people. Mm-hmm. And so in your experience it may mean one thing, but that's where you have to really be careful, as I was talking about, and it might mean something totally different to the other person. Checking it out.
To that is avoid setting up expectations about people.
Karen,
one thing I like to, when I think of Kay's question, a perspective I like to look at it from is from the perspective of the institution. And what, because I think people are very malleable or very adaptable, depending on their culture, depending on their work environment, depending on what is the expectations. And conflicts in institutions and organizations can actually have a huge effect on how people will respond. So I look at, if I got a response like that, I would look at it from what sort of expectations does that person have in this environment when they think they can respond to me like that? What is going on? In terms of, in a way it says a lot of things good about people, in a way it says a lot of things bad about people. Because I think you can take a good person in one situation with certain conflicts, very limited, and you can put them in another situation and you can have civil war or revolution. So I kind of look at it sometimes what internally is happening in a person, and I might probably wouldn't respond to that person from an interpersonal perspective, because I think they're sort of fucked up, basically. But I would look at them more from an institutional perspective. And I would guess that most likely it could very well be a man, it could very well be a hierarchical issue, a power issue, that they would respond to you that way. Because it's very superficial, it's very very abrasive.
But the case I was thinking about does not mm-hmm. involve a work situation. It was what I thought was more free-form. It was just like...
We're running out of time. I'd like to take Rachel next. And Nancy, should I cut it off now, or do we have a little more time? What's your...
5 minutes.
5 more minutes. Okay, Rachel.
I have a couple of things that are related. When I was in my training, one of my supervisors taught me this, I have a problem. Going with this phrase to someone, I have a problem, this is my problem. And my problem might be, I can't stand being around you. But you find a way to make it your own problem, and the person's automatically receptive. Mm-hmm. Even if that problem directly relates to the other person's behavior, still you're saying, I just, I'm a really rigid kind of person, I can't deal with this kind of thing, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, what I've been experimenting with recently, especially in a hierarchical type of situation, I've been working with my system where I work, is to ask the person I'm approaching for potential solutions, do you have any idea how I can go at solving this problem? Do you know who I should ask to try to help me with this problem? Mm-hmm. And I've gotten a lot farther that way than I have previously using the, what's your problem?
Exactly, yeah. That really gets at, it acknowledges that there could be, that there's something going on for you. It's taking responsibility for your own responses.
Yeah.
Warren, and then Rick, and then Aaron, and then Cindy.
it's nice to listen, but sometimes if the topic is too anxiety-provoking or too painful, people just stop listening. And I think there might be a room here for indirection. So you approach the threatening topic, not directly. It might be, let's not talk about me or you, but let's talk about some third party. Or if it's me you're dealing with, I might approach it much more abstractly in terms of psychological theory or something like that. Not me or you, but something more universal. I think indirection has a place, an important place here, but I'm not at all sure. Maybe it doesn't work.
Who did I say was next, Rick?
I'm bringing it into this discussion in the context of within this room. I come to Prairie because it's a social, community, family environment for me. And I look at all you people and I feel toward you as if you're my brothers and sisters. It's as though we've been raised in the same family and have the same general outlook on life and value system. I don't always get along with my sister, my twin sister, or my younger brother. I get along pretty well with my older sister, but that still they're my brothers and sisters, and I love them. And I'm able and willing to take hits from them and continue to love them. And so I'm hoping that as we think about what you presented today, it has to do with also not just these things about our bosses and other people outside, but the people in this room. And I mean, I'm sure that I've upset lots of people. I have to admit that you really haven't upset me that much. Because I kind of think of you as my brothers and sisters. I mean, you know, so, okay, that's who they are, and I'll see them some other time. You know, they'll be around for Thanksgiving, you know. Anyway, that's basically what I'm saying.
Aaron.
There was somebody else before me. Did somebody get that story? No?
I think so.
Well, following along with that, I really like this icebreaker kind of thing in here, but the examples are one-on-one with your friend kind of examples. Can you come up with some that would work in a group discussion? A nice, you know, you can't say in a group discussion. Rick just said something I don't like for, you know, as an example, and I can't say, I value our relationship with anything. That doesn't work with a group discussion, but maybe something, you know, let's brainstorm some of those little phrases that we could use in a group discussion.
I think you could, you know, certainly open up with, you know, I really value our discussion here. I mean, that's something that's pretty neutral. And it's probably true even if you disagree with the person who talked before. Or it's really exciting to be able to express divergent opinions, and here's mine. I'm wondering what you think about this.
Something that's sort of soft-pedaled, like, you know, instead of just blatantly saying I disagree with you, is something soft. I think, no, I'm not sure. I think that that's correct, which at least then also acknowledges the fact that they could be right and you could be right. But I think maybe, you know,
I would sort of try to stay away from correct, right, wrong. Mm-hmm. But you know, instead saying, you know, I think about it another way.
I'd like to acknowledge Bob, who's had his hand for quite a while, and I'll come back to you since you've spoken already. Bob, go ahead.
Okay. 25 years ago, I had a workshop, and it broke communication into four parts. And I see a lot of elements in the discussion, particularly Rachel's description is real close to it, and then blend and redirect with Marilyn. But first, didn't acknowledge the situation, describe it. Then second, describe your feelings about it. And then third, ask their feelings about it.
Yeah, I remember
the fourth part. but at least the acknowledging, just describing in a neutral way the situation you're at, and describing your personal feelings and then getting that therapy on these panelings is groundwork to move forward from there. And I can't remember what the call is.
I see.
Well, I'd like to say that in this room, I think there's a tremendous relationship, rapport, exchange, communication, diversity, and that's part of what keeps me coming to Prairie is the opportunity to hear the nuances and the conflicts and the very unique and strongly opinionated people who come, and that's part of the joy of our being together. I do know that some people have been hurt in the process over the years, perhaps more than others. And so one thing I wanted to do is acknowledge your efforts to bring this to the surface for us to really talk about. And thank you so much for a really productive discussion. And second, I think there's so much yet to be mined in terms of the group interaction, and it's so important to our health as a community that perhaps we ought to consider a few more services to really get into greater depth in this area. But thank you. This is wonderful.
Thank you, Cindy, for thanking them and for wrapping this up at this point. The offering basket and volunteer sign-up sheet's been going around. Now, if anyone would like to introduce themselves or reintroduce themselves or be introduced, this is your chance. It's not a requirement, but, you know, we don't fight, as I often say. We'd like to get to know you better. So, Betty.
Well, this is Betty. You may not have seen me for a couple of weeks. Jack Jones and dislocated his shoulder. Some of you may have heard. And so he's got his arm strapped to his chest and can't move it. So everything, and it's fortunately his left arm. Mm-hmm. So everything he can't do, like his hearing in this year, I have to be there to do. Anyway, I wanted to thank you guys for the delightful card that was sent to him. It was a picture of a bear. Everybody wrote such nice things. I want to thank you for that.
Send him our best wishes. Karen.
Well, we do have a plan, a sequel to this discussion of conflict. And I just want to tell other people who haven't heard about it or know about it, there's a conference called Planning for Conference and Unitarian Universalist Conservation. It's going to be March 24th through 26th. Four of us are going to go, and there's room for two more, still as of yet, last I heard. So if you're interested, I do have some more information. I received email information. I also received a mailing about the conference, so please speak to me after if you're interested in going. It costs, we did get a congregational waiver fee, so the congregation doesn't have to pay $100, but each person that is going is paying $160. So it indicates a pretty high level of interest and willingness to put their time into participating in this.
It's conflict.
The title is called Planning for Conflict in Unitarian Universalist Congregations. It's going to be in Chicago. And also, it's very, very interesting the way they've set this up. They're going to use the web for us to communicate with other congregations, to post comments and work. There'll be a workbook. They don't have an agenda yet, but it's going to be, it sounds to me like it's going to be pretty comprehensive, and it's going to include a lot of opportunities to communicate.
When is that?
It's March 24th through 26th.
Friday evening through Saturday afternoon.
Think about it, because there are, as I know, there's room for two more people, and we have four
adults. It includes meals and housing.
Yes.
160. Yes.
Things move too fast for me sometimes. I'm introducing my grandson, Jason Grinsberg. Oh. He moved here in October from Oakland.
Okay. Welcome. Well, we're the Berkeley of the Midwest, but not the Oakland of the Midwest. good to have you with us today. Yes, Delita.
I heard that Pat Cotton's twin sister passed away. Anyone else has heard anything about it? But, do you recall a conversation? You know, you have any details?
Okay, Pat Cotley's sister passed away, we think.
A twin sister, yes.
Twin sister. Any other introductions? Yes?
Stand up, please.
I'm Tom.
I'm Mary. Hi.
I'm just curious.
Well, welcome. Be sure to stay for our coffee hour, which is also our hot chocolate hour. maybe juice today, I don't know. That's a good time to talk about the program and just catch up with other people, get to know other people better. Announcements.
We haven't caught up with the prairie fire yet. The Emily Dickinson program will not be March 19th, but March 26th. And if you want to sing a song, or contact Delita or me, we have a stack of songs, and we will be forcing them on. unfortunately, we're leaving Howland for a week, so it'll be a while. But we'll have it to you, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ahead of the service. March 19th, I think, we're going to have a program on Richard Feynman, a physicist, and I think Al and I will participate, and anybody else who is interested in Feynman, see me, call me. I think Bob Lourdes, if you're out here, will join us.
Problem.
We've had some problems scheduling our potluck lunch for the RE committee and RE teachers. We've had to move it around a couple times. It was March 26th, but now there's a conflict with the conference on conflict, and that would help. We've moved it back to March 5th now, so it's back to March 5th at Larry Dollar's house at 12 o'clock at potluck. And I forgot to mention one joy, and that is that this was my week for shoveling snow.
You deserve a break this week, yes. Ken.
Right after the program, there will be a meeting of those who are interested in reviewing the current mission statement.
Paula.
Our shift is coming up this Tuesday morning for purchasing groceries and staffing the breakfast for the homeless shelter. There's an associated sorrow also. Ann Pryor was going to staff it, but her husband's sister died suddenly, like there's a tragedy in the family, and you have to be out of town right now. So right now we have an opening for two to cook and one to buy groceries, and you can see me. Also, I have a collection can on the greeting table if you'd like to donate money to buy the groceries.
Okay. Nikki.
The program committee will meet for a couple minutes after the service, and Linda and Paula are invited. We're still looking for new members. What? Yep.
You can always attend, you know, other program committee meetings or board meetings. I mean, they are open.
Yeah, right.
You can participate to whatever degree you wish. Susan.
I just wanted to bring everybody's attention. I have revised the schedule for Prairie Play Readers, who dedicated reading plays. The three last dates are March 15th, March 18th, April 15th, and May 19th.
A note from Pat Watkins, the trip to the Norman Rockwell exhibit in Chicago needs 10 more people to sign up or it won't go. So deadline March 7th, please contact Pat. There's two other museums nearby with exhibits showing also, and of course if you want to shop till you drop and within an hour or two, you can do that also. So please contact Pat so we can get this fundraising trip going. Rachel.
I just want to mention Chalice Lighters. Quite a few of us are Chalice Lighters. We get reminders 3 times a year to send in our donations, which is $10 each time. Are you your book? And the reason for Chalice Lighters is to help unit, the Central Midwest District churches who need some financial help to do special programs or changes, and we might be able to get some money ourselves if we apply for it.
It's a helpful part in the grant approval process.
If you're interested, I'd be really happy to sign you up. Thank you.
Rick.
Marilyn and I are hosting Sunday afternoon at the movies. See us afterwards.
What's the movie?
We don't know. See us.
I saw the note in the newspaper, which I thought was a good idea. Rick.
Just point of information, I didn't hear anyone else announce who gets the secret friends letters. Who are those to be turned into?
There's a box.
There's a box
out here on the table.
Okay, and you can ask Robin, I'm sure knows which box is which, if there are two. Any other announcements? Okay, final words.
Well, we don't have any final words because it's time to go home, but I thought it would just be so nice to see this again. When how you feel is understood, you have a friend, and that feels good. Final words. Will you turn to the hymn and face the center? And these people face inward, so everybody's kind of facing the mic or the pain area, right? Are you ready to pain? Yeah, we're going to raise the pain.